Okay, there's some sheets here. Thank you. Okay. The original idea of the... Hi, good evening. There are handout sheets over on the table. Yeah, there's some extra. Okay. The goal of the shiur, originally the plan was to speak about David and Avshalom, but David and Avshalom is such a big subject, honestly, and it requires, to do Avshalom correctly, Avshalom interacts with so many characters, it's a little difficult to understand what was going on with Avshalom without understanding the other characters that are involved. So as opposed to focusing on a single character of Avshalom and his relationship with David, Avshalom really symbolizes David's biggest trouble, certainly was, since Avshalom tried to kill him, which is not a great thing for a son to do to his father. Plus, he threw him into exile and really threw David for some emotional loops, some of which we'll see today. So what I decided to do was just take a look. Instead of giving a shiur about David and Avshalom, which is a little bit disconnected, I decided to give a shiur about David's troubles, all of which follow, every single one follows Maisa of David and Bathsheba. Each one is affected by David and Bathsheba, as we'll see in a little bit. Before we go into Ian, though, before we examine those problems in depth and understand what caused them and what to do about them or what David had to do about them or what we're supposed to learn from them, I just want to review the problems that he faces, essentially, from the sin of David and with Bathsheba and with Uriah Hiti until the end of Shmuel Bet, essentially till the end of his life. There's an interesting... There's a medrash which says David is famous for a line in Hallel which says Yisor Yisorani Yal L'Mavet Lo Natanani, which means you punish me and hurt me, just don't give me to death. And Rav Chaim Shmuel Lovitz actually, who was the Rosh Hashiva of Mir in his Sichot Musar, mentions that you have to realize how incredible that is coming from David. The Gemara says that he was able every day to fill up a chalice with his own tears. He had a miserable life after David and Bathsheba. It was not an easy life. It was a life full of pain. Even before Bathsheba, to be honest, being on the run all the time, it also wasn't great. At least, though, before Bathsheba, the problems were not of his own making. They were him trying to deal with other people's problems, be them Shaul's problems or Ish-bosheth's problems, Avner's and Yoav's. After Bathsheba, that's where things start to change a little bit. So the Gemara says that about David and Melech. So I'd just like to go through those problems, which allow him to fill up a cup every day with tears, and then see if we could examine them and see, well, what the message that the Navi is trying to tell us. The first problem is the rape of Tamar. That's the first thing that happens. It's in Perek Yud Gimel. Tamar is raped by her brother, Amnon, and I use that word lightly. We'll discuss exactly what that means a little bit later in the shiur. Amnon is the firstborn son of David HaMelech, which means he is not only a king of the son, he is next in line for the Melucha. The halacha is that it always goes to the firstborn son, unless the firstborn son has no Yirat Shemayim. In that case, you can pick who you want. But otherwise, it always goes to the firstborn son. It's the halacha. After the rape of Amnon, the rape of Tamar by Amnon, Tamar's brother, in this case, more real brother, Avshalom, who is the thirdborn son of David HaMelech, kills Amnon, murders Amnon. David is unamused, to say the least, and Avshalom goes into exile. But even during the exile, what we'll see is David's soul was very much connected with Avshalom for reasons which we try to explore at least a little bit, if not completely today. Avshalom manages to get called back with the help of Yoav, and then the next thing he does is lead a rebellion against his father where he attempts to kill him. David goes into exile, and in a battle there, he kills Avshalom. More troubles. During, sort of before and after the exile, what we have is two other problems which are related a little bit. Yeah, did I? Yes, you're right. David doesn't kill him. Yoav kills him. he was upset about it, and we'll see that Yoav and David have a big, big fight about it. Thank you very much. I'm sorry. We'll see that Yoav and David have a big, big fight about it, and we'll see. We'll try to get an impression of who's right and who's wrong about whether Avshalom deserved to be killed or not. It's a thorny issue. But you're right. Not David, Yoav. Thank you. There are two other major problems that he deals with in that same area on the way out and the way back from exile from Avshalom, which is a guy by the name of Mephibosheth and Siva, a two-pair named Mephibosheth and Siva, another one by the name of Shimi ben Gera. Let's discuss Shimi ben Gera because at face value it's simpler. Shimi ben Gera was from Shevet Binyamin. He was a relative of the house of Shaul, and he calls David Ish Damim, say Ish Damim, which we would incorrectly translate as go, go, murderous person. We will correctly translate it a little bit later, exactly what Shimi was talking about. Shimi curses him, wishes nothing but bad on him. When David comes back, Shimi then is more contrite since David managed to come back from the exile, and we'll see why and what Shimi has in mind. Mephibosheth and Siva is a different story, and I have to give a little bit of background. Mephibosheth was the only remaining son of Yonatan, which makes him a direct line for the king after Ishbosheth was killed. Ishbosheth was Shaul's son. Let's not go into why Ishbosheth was killed. Mephibosheth, and again, here I'm going to give you a statement which I'm going to ask you to take as fact because we don't have time to prove it. That would require us to do work in the Perek where David says, is there anybody left to the house of Shaul, and he finds out Mephibosheth. Mephibosheth has been exiled from his property by none other than Siva. Siva is not a relative of Shaul. It's a machlok in the Gemara whether he is even Jewish or not. Either he is not Jewish at all, Siva, or if he is Jewish, then he is not from the line of Shaul's house. The property for Siva took over all of the property of Shaul. They find Mephibosheth. He's not like admitting to David where Mephibosheth is. So David sends out messengers to figure out, or he forces Siva to tell who it is. Where do we find Mephibosheth? On the other side of the Jordan River, up almost to the top north of Israel, by Shevet Menasheh, which is up by the Golan Heights. Essentially, he's been moved across the Jordan River. He brings him back. He brings Mephibosheth back, and he tells Siva, who he seems very upset with about what's going on, that Siva is going to be the servant to Mephibosheth for the rest of his life, and every one of Siva's children is going to be servants to Mephibosheth's children for the rest of their lives. That's a background. When Siva, where we pick up in our story, where the troubles really start, because things were going pretty well then, things were handled pretty well by David, by David HaMelech, where they come back, there's a big argument about who is loyal to King David or not. Siva accuses Mephibosheth of disloyalty. Mephibosheth accuses Siva of tricking Mephibosheth, and we'll see exactly what happens. In the end, David cannot decide between the two, and he splits the property of Shaul between the both of them. We'll get into all of those stories, but I wanted to give you a brief overview of the problems that David faces. And now that we have the problems, I would like to, we can go on to the actual shiur. This is an old mantra of mine. I've said it. I've said it many times. I've even said it recently, speaking in the shul at Ari's bar mitzvah, which is that there's no such thing as crime and punishment. There's only crime and consequence. I'd like to explain that a little bit in terms of David HaMelech, but let's see if we could focus on the crime and punishment, and then sort of debunk the idea that God chooses a punishment which matches up for the crime that a person creates. It certainly seems at face value, in Shmuel Bet, that there is crime and punishment, and that punishment is always mida keneged mida versus the crime. How do we know that? If we take a look at Shmuel Bet, Perek Yud Bet, where Hashem says, based on what you did, this is going to be the following punishment. If you remember from, I don't know, it was about 3 weeks ago, right after Natan comes, he tells him a parable of the Kivsat Harash, of the poor guy who owns a lamb. It's taken away by force by the rich person. And then they admit, he says, guess what, David, it's you. So Hashem says like this, Kol Amar Hashem, Hinani Mekim, it's the first paragraph on crime and punishment, Hinani Mekim Elecha Ra'a Mi Beitecha, I will arise from you, I will raise up from you an evil from your house, V'lakachti et Nashecha Le'inecha, and I will take your wives from your eyes, V'natati the Re'echa, and I will give them to your other. Be careful, by the way, the word re'echa does not mean friend in this case. It just means another, or somebody who's close to you, or somebody who you know. V'shachav im nashecha, and he will sleep with your wives, le'nei ha-shemesh, to the eyes of the sun, which means in public. Ki ata asita v'sater, because you did what you did in private. V'ani, and me, God, has said, davar hazeh, Neged Kol Yisrael. I'll do this in front of all Yisrael. V'neged Hashemesh Hazot, in front of this sun. That punishment seems to come to fruition when Absalom takes over power. The first thing, Absalom rolls into Yerushalayim victorious. He speaks to Achitophel, who, if you remember, and it's rather important, is Bathsheba's grandfather, and says, Vayomer Absalom al Achitophel. So Absalom says to Achitophel, who is essentially, Achitophel has become a traitor to David and decided to support Absalom. Achitophel says, Havu lachem etza manaset. Tell us what's the first thing we should do. I'm the new king. Give me a first command. Vayomer Achitophel al Shalom, bo el pilagshe avicha, come to the concubines of your father, which David, by the way, had left to guard the house. Asheri niach l'shmur abayit, oh, actually it says that right here. V'shama kol Yisrael, and all of Israel will hear, ki nivashta et avicha, that you have, from the word livosh, is like to dry up or to shame your father. V'chazku yidei kol asher itcha, and that will essentially raise the spirit and strengthen the morale of the people around you. V'yatu l'avshalom l'ohel, he essentially put an ohel al hagag, he put it right up there so everybody could see. V'yavo avshalom l'pilagshe aviv l'enei kol Yisrael. Seems to be an exact midah k'neged midah. There seems to be another midah k'neged midah, which is also, which Chazal bring down, which is a crime and punishment. And by the way, I want to show you, to mention the difficulty morally or philosophically with this. It means that Absalom essentially didn't have a choice to be good or evil. Right? God decides from the beginning that he's going to raise somebody up from your house. Absalom might as well be a robot. Where's the free will? Where's the free choice? So it's a very difficult question. Yeah. And he ran away. The other, so a person does have the ability to essentially break the.
Yeah.
But the interesting thing is that would essentially render a nevuah as being invalid, which is okay. We have that by Yonah, right? Yonah says, if you don't change your ways, then in 40 days. You're right, very true. There's another answer that Rambam gives in Mor Nevuchim. It's a pretty famous answer, which is that, yes, while I chose you to be the destroyer, such as Mitzrayim or Ashur, I didn't tell you to get carried away. So that's also a famous answer. That is, to what lengths do you go? Nonetheless, the lengths, the answer, the Rambam, is more difficult here, because here the lengths are spelled out explicitly, and that's exactly what Avshalom does. A more difficult thing would be to say that Avshalom knew about the Nevuah, which is not unheard of, and he wants to do it. In that case, why did Avshalom have to ask Achitophel about it? But these questions could also be answered. I want to go on and show another Midah Keneged Midah, crime and punishment, and then I want to discuss why I actually don't agree with the concept of crime and punishment, and I'll show you on the next page when we get there what I do believe philosophically. If you remember, God punishes him with two things: with death, which David manages to sneak out of because, I'm sorry, with one thing, which is the women, right? And then David himself punishes himself with two things. During the story about the Kibsat Arash, he says, A, Ben Mavet, who, this person who did this deserves death, and B, Shalem Arbatayim, a person, at the Kibsat Yishalem Arbatayim, for the rich guy who forced the poor guy to sell him the keves, he'll have to pay four times the price. So the Ben Mavet he managed to get away from because he said Chatati Lashem and he sung that Mizmor of Nunalef, which I spoke about that time, and he managed to sneak out of the death penalty or to be, you know, to essentially have Chapara without having to do the death penalty. What does the Gemara say about the word Yishalem Arba Times? So the Gemara says that David actually paid the price. Let's just go to the punchline, which is on the third line. Or at the very, if you take a look, it says Talmud Bavli Masechet Yumadaf Chaf Bet Amud Bet. That's on the bottom of this crime and punishment page. If you go to the second line towards the end, it says Ma'ininhu, which means what are these things that he managed to get away from? He could not, you know what? Skip to the end of the third line. V'yeta kibsa yishalem arba tayim. So what does it mean that he'll pay the price with four times his sin for the keves, which is supposed to be Bathsheba. So these are the four people that David paid the price with. Yeled, which is the child that David had with Bathsheba, the first child who died. The second one is Amnon, who got killed. The third one is Tamar, who did not die, but was raped. And the fourth one was Avshalom. This is problematic for a number of reasons. to say that a person should come up and do exactly what God instructed is true. But the rape of Tamar? I mean, where's the midah keneged midah there? Now, I'm sure you may be tempted to find a midah keneged midah, but if you do, I'll have a difficulty with it. I'm anticipating a certain midah keneged midah. That is, where's the midah keneged midah with Tamar? Why should Tamar be raped because of what David did? According to this medrash, Tamar was essentially a punishment for what David did. Where's the midah keneged midah there that his daughter, or that Absalom's sister, we'll see what I mean by that, should be raped? I don't understand. Or Amnon. Why should Amnon die? Absalom I can understand, because Absalom was involved in the whole thing, etc., etc. But what does it justify the death of the Yelid, I understand. Yelid. Why the Yelid was born from the incorrect relationship, whether you want to call it adultery or not, as I mentioned, some machloket in Gemara Ketuvot, whether it was actually adultery or not. So I can understand why the Yelid would die, because it was essentially the product of an incorrect relationship. But Amnon, Tamar, I mean, where's the midah keneged midah? I don't get it. Anybody? Does anybody want to proffer any possibilities? Oh, we'll talk about the relationships. You're saying that Absalom married.
No, King David married Absalom's mother.
That's right.
Yeah,
and the reason why they say that it was essentially what's called an Ishat Yifat Toar, the reason why they say that is because otherwise it looks like there's incest between, it's a very difficult Gemara, I have to tell you, because the reason why the Gemara says what it does is because if Tamar is Absalom's sister, and Absalom is Amnon's brother, that means that what Amnon was doing was not rape, it was incest. And therefore, in order for Chazal to get out of the incest, they explain that, it's a strange halacha, that the act of sexuality, that is the act that a man does with a woman, Isha Yifat Torah, for the first time, is not actually considered a real act. The child, therefore, is not considered a real family member, and therefore, essentially, Tamar was not related to Amnon, because the child was a prodigy of Isha Yifat Torah. That's why that medrash is mentioned. It's a difficult medrash. And I'll give an alternate possibility where essentially there is no incest. On the other hand, where we hear bad things about Absalom, we also know that Absalom was a Nazir, according to Chazal. So how could he be a Nazir if he was a bad guy? And then he was a Nazir Olam, that is, forever he was a Nazir. And he seemed to keep his vows. Absalom is a very complicated character. So I'm okay with where, you know, he's a bad guy, he deserves what he got, or because of what David did with his mother. I'm okay with Absalom. It's Amnon, Tamar, that I have a lot of problems with. They seem to be, I mean, what does the Gemara mean? And as I mentioned, I think Medrash is never pshat, but I think it's always right. So how do we examine this flow of events and show them as part of what David did? And I thought you might say, by the way, an answer that I've heard is that the rape was Midah Keneged Midah because of what David did with Bathsheba. However, we don't see rape by David and Bathsheba. As I mentioned in the Shiur 3 weeks ago, there seemed to be actually a good relationship with Bathsheba. And the most classic case of that, in fact, somebody here even mentioned that, you know, why wouldn't Bathsheba go home the next day? It was exactly like Tamar and Amnon. But it wasn't exactly Tamar and Amnon. David didn't send her away, right? Like Amnon sends away, get this woman away from me. It says, Vatashav el Beita. She gets up and she leaves on her own free will. So while certainly when the king comes over to you and says, you know, let's have a tryst, you have probably a limited amount of free choice. To say that it was a masev rape, there's no medrash that says such a thing that I found, and it's not masev from the psukim. So it's very difficult to say that the act of rape was a midah keneged midah for what David did to Bathsheba. I mean, if you want to say it, I guess it's possible to say it, but I am certainly not comfortable with that opinion. Yeah. Go ahead. So he has Uriah killed in battle.
So the respect of the husband of this woman that was taken by Amnon,
Tamar, you mean? Like a forcible removal from her place.
Like, yeah. How would a husband feel if his wife was taken away from
Yes, yes. It's possible. I mean, it seems pretty rough. I mean, it seems a little bit more than Mida Keneged Mida. Seems a little like, yes, like it's close, there's a parallel, and yet it's like way over, you know, like way over the top. But it's certainly possible. Now, the fact that there is a connection, is sort of proven by the way the parak begins. It's in Shmuel Bet. I should have my baby Tanakh. It works much better. Shmuel Bet starts with the words, which are of Perek Yud Gimel, which is the story of Tamar and Amnon, of the rape of Tamar, with these three very important words, Vayihi Acharei Chein. That's linkage. Vayihi Acharei Chein, and it was after that. That's not talking about a temporal linkage, a linkage of time. That means that fact A caused fact B. So the fact that the Chazal are certainly right, the fact that the story of Tamar follows not only sequentially time-wise after what David did, but that there's a thematic connection or a moral connection between the two. My question is, and I hear your examples are possible, but I'd like to take a different approach by removing the whole crime and punishment issue and show that what happened with Tamar and Amnon was a direct result of Maaseh David and Bathsheba. What I've done in the next page, time and consequence, the first thing I'd like to do before I go into anything is explain why it's not incest. David married a woman named Macha. Macha was the daughter of the king of Geshur and had a baby and had a child named Absalom. That was his third child. Macha may have been married, according to some opinions, to a first husband before she got pulled into David's political relationship. What happened to the first guy? I don't know. He died. Be divorced. Probably not a divorce, but certainly a death if possible. Tamar, therefore, is a child of Macha and the first husband. Macha then goes over to David HaMelech, and David HaMelech has Absalom, which makes Tamar and Absalom half-brother-sister. David marries Ahinoam and has Amnon, that's the first child, which would make Absalom and Amnon half-brother and sister, which would make Tamar and Amnon not related by blood. Do you see how that works out? That's the way most Meforshim go. It's the way the Abravanel goes. It's the way most Meforshim choose to decide, although not all. It's the way I prefer to go for the following reason. Because in Pasuk, if you take a look at Pasuk, and I printed out the whole selection here, where he's about to rape Tamar, and Tamar is trying to convince him convince Amnon not to rape her, she says like this, in Pasuk Yud Gimel, which is about halfway down, in bold, you see the good gimel. It says, "Va'ani Tamar speaking, Anna olich et cherpati. How will I bear this shame if you rape me? Va'tatia chakna kinevalim, and you also will be like one of the hated ones for doing this rape, be Israel. Ve'ata daber nalamelch, just talk to the king. Ki lo yimnaeni mimcha, because he will not prevent us from being married." Very difficult to say those words if it's incest. If they really do have incest, then those words are a real accusation of evil against David HaMelech. I have a hard time swallowing that, so I prefer to ignore the idea that they may have Amnon and Tamar have an incestuous relationship. Now you can, the Gemara answers it up by saying that Tamar was born from an Ishat Ifat Toar, and therefore the first child is related but not really related. It's difficult. A lot of Mefarshim have a big problem with it, and therefore I'd like to leave it off the side for now, even though it's certainly a possibility. If you've noticed, I've highlighted a few interesting things. First of all, the word that I've highlighted, the word that repeats over and over in a parsha, and this is an idea called a milat manche. A milat manche is a word which is repeated over and over in a parsha so that the point is driven home. The Navi will go out of its way to actually mention the word where it's not even appropriate to mention the word so that you get the idea. Dong, 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 dong. So you really can't miss it. The word which appears really most in this parsha, which is a strange word, I bolded. Do you see which one it is? Shchav. Shchav appears 6 times in this parsha of Amnon and Tamar. Anybody like to guess how many times the word Shchav appears in the parsha of David and Bathsheba? 6 on the nose. Now, this is not a mystical occurrence. This is the Navi was making a point. Not only did he want to make you sure that the idea here is about the sexuality as a result of what, that as connected with David's sexuality, he wanted to make sure that you knew that they were exactly the same. Ah, but I just said they're not exactly the same. You can't compare rape to an acquisition of this woman, even though it's possible to, you know, somehow make connections. It's hard to really say that David was a rapist in this case. There is, however, another connection. And here's the idea of crime and consequence versus crime and punishment. Let's go through the story. There's a really bad guy named Yonadab. Yonadab is related to the king. Yonadab sees that Amnon loves this girl Tamar. And Tamar is still in control of himself, that he knows not to mess around. Amnon knows not to mess around with Tamar. That's what the first pasuk is. Vayi acharechen u'Avshalom ben David achot yafa, he had a beautiful sister. Ushma Tamar vayeh haveha Amnon ben David. He really loved her. Vayetzer l'Amnon lichalot. He wanted her so much. He was sick. Bavur Tamar achoto. Now, here's the difficulty. Why the word achoto if it's not really a sister? I'll explain that a little bit. Ki betulahi. She was a virgin. That was apparently the reason why he could not marry her. We'll see why, by the way. She was a special virgin, not just a standard virgin. Vayipalei b'nei Amnon lasot lo ma'uma. And he knew not to do anything. What's that? I saw it, but I don't remember the part. We'll see, actually, there was a special status for this type of virgin in David's court. You'll see, it's very interesting. Well, Amnon rea ushmo Yonadab ben Shimi, achi David, so Shima. So there was a guy named Yonadab. He was very chacham. Vayomer lo, madu ata kacha dal ben amelef bokebo. How come you're so depressed, even though he knew very well? So Amnon says, I love my sister. I love my sister, Tamar. Look at Pasuk Hey. Vayomer lo Yonadav, shav al mishkavecha. So again, you have sort of the repetition of the word. Sleep on your bed. Vahatchal, and pretend to be sick. Uva avicha lerotcha, and when your father comes to see you, va'amarta elav, you should say exactly like this. Tavona Tamar achoti, let my sister Tamar come, v'tavreini lechem, and let her feed me bread. From the word lahavrot means to make, have her bring me back to life with bread. V'asita le'ine et habriya, and she'll make this briya, liman asher erev v'achalti miyada. So the word that's stressed here is v'tavreini lechem v'et habriya. Do you remember from the shiur 2 or 3 weeks ago what the whole issue was with the tavreini lechem? When the boy was dying, when the child was dying, he got sick. So he prayed and he was down on the floor and his avadim came over to him. And what did they say? I wrote it on the bottom of the page. Vayakumu ziknei beito. They came to David, alav, lahakimo, to get him up from the land. They were ashamed because essentially he was making a big deal out of a child that was born out of sin to a certain degree. Velo ava, and he did not agree. Velo vara itam lachem. He would not take bread for them. The word ava, by the way, take a look. I've also highlighted the word ava, which is a very strange word for not to agree. It's used very rarely in Tanakh, but there it is in Pasuk Yudalit. Velo ava lishmo b'kola. When she was begging not to be raped, Amnon refused to listen to her. And again, before Pasuk Yudzayim, velo ava lishmo Allah. Over and over again, there's sort of a second word, velo ava, velo ava. So, Yonadav is one chacham. Yonadav sends a message to David, and the message to David is, think about what David's thinking about. I don't know how previously he was on the floor and they brought him over the bread and they said to him, Tavrik sat lechem, and he rejects it because he feels that he is to blame for the sin which has caused the death of his child and who knows what trouble it may cause. Yonadav goes over to Amnon and say, listen, use these words, shkav al mishkavecha v'ani eshkav v'tavreini lechem. Pretty evil, isn't it? Essentially sending a direct message to David, which is, back off. I got problems. You got problems. And the proof of the pudding, by the way, is something shocking that happens at the end, in Pasuk Chaf Aleph, at the very end, I underlined it. Vamelech David Shama, after she's raped, and he throws her out of the house. And by the way, before we do that, there's a fascinating, let's read Pasuk Yutet first, which is about 4 lines to the bottom. Vatikach Tamar Efer al Rosha, she puts dust on her head. Uktonet apasim asher alea kra'a. What does she have on her? It's interesting. Only two people in Tanakh wear ktonet pasim. One is Yosef, and one is Tamar. And I don't want to go into it, although the pasuk previously says that essentially all the virgin girls of the king wore these clothes. It was a status symbol. What exactly they did with it, I'm not sure. They may have been foreign messengers. It was like the vestigial virgins, something like that. There was a certain status that Tamar had as a virgin in the house of the king. So she rips up her ketone pasim. Vatasim yadal roshav vatelech haloch v'zaka. She's screeching. I mean, everybody knows what's going on. There's no secret. In Pasuk Chaf, Avshalom tells her to shut up. We'll see why, because Avshalom is going to hatch a plot. But in Pasuk Chaf Aleph, something terrible happens. V'amelech David shama. I mean, how could he not shama? He heard et kol hadvarim ha'elu, at everything that had happened, every last word. Vayichar lo ma'od, and he was super angry. What do you expect to show up in the next pasuk? Therefore,
what he does.
Look at the next pasuk. V'lo diber Avshalom im Amnon. Lemeira atov kisanei Avshalom et Amnon. It goes back to Avshalom, and Avshalom won't talk to Amnon. What does David do? What does David do? He hears it. He's angry. He's upset. His daughter has just been raped by his son. Probably not incestual, but still a horrible thing. And what does David do? Nothing. Shocking, isn't it? It's upsetting you. Why doesn't David do anything? Because David has been cowed by Yonadav. David Yonadav sent a message that says, what right do you have to speak about rape? If you don't mind me saying, rape is an issur d'oraita, but it doesn't carry a death penalty. The penalty of rape is you owe money to the father, and if the woman wants, this man must marry the woman so she doesn't wind up being a scorned woman for the rest of her life. But rape is not a death penalty crime. I'm not trying to minimize it. It's a terrible, horrible thing. She even says, Lo asachem b'Yisrael. This is not what Jews do. This is not what we do. Nonetheless, it is not a death penalty crime. And Yonadav starts off the conversation and says, listen, remind David of his little dead baby. Remind David about how they tried to give him food and how shachav im aveicha. This is
happening.
What's that? What does Amnon say? Amnon says in Pasuk... There's that word ve'evra. Yeah. Now, why does he change the word lechem into levavot? Actually, I'm not sure. I think that probably it has a significance. I saw in one place that it reminds us of Shir Hashirim from the word levavot. Apparently, she was baking levavot somewhere in Shir Hashirim. I'm not sure exactly where, but I didn't feel the connection, so I didn't bring it down. But the conversation is pretty much the same. The words are slightly changed, but the basic idea of evra lechem. I believe the message has gone clearly to David. I think by the word shchav appears 6 times here and 6 times by David, that David can't help but associating his sin with Tamar. What I'm trying to say is that what happened to Tamar and Amnon is not a punishment which is a punishment for what David did, but it's a consequence of David, what David did, which means David put himself in a situation based on his act that when confronted by a similar, although unequal act, he's frozen. I mean, you should feel the freeze in Pasuk Chaf Aleph. Vayichar lo ma'od, nothing. Frozen. No response. And then that will lead to Absalom murdering Amnon. And to a certain degree, and I don't mean to be too critical about David, but one would think that if David, we have no reason to believe that Absalom wanted to kill Amnon beforehand. There's no reason to believe. There are those who say that Absalom was in on it with Yonadav all the time, and he was sacrificing his daughter so he could kill Amnon. Why? Because if Amnon's dead, guess who's the next guy in line? Actually, a guy named Kilab, but Kilab disappears. We never know what happens to him. He simply disappears. Therefore, let's assume he's dead, and the next person in line is Absalom. So there's those who say that Absalom was in the death of his sister the whole time, which allowed him to have an excuse to kill Amnon, and therefore he become next in line. It's not an easy read here. It seems that he's really upset. I mean, there's no reason to assume that a guy would not be pretty darn upset if his sister was raped. And yet I would like to say that had David acted and said, oh, now you're going to marry this girl that you just threw out of your house, you'll marry her, you'll pay me, and you'll live according to the way, you'll be punished in the way that the Torah demands, I think that Absalom would have had much less feet to stand on to say, I have a right to murder my brother or not. So essentially, the inaction caused the punishment, but again, I don't want to say punishment, I want to say consequence, and the inaction was caused by David's own guilt feeling, his own sense of identification. Did I rape? Maybe I did rape her. Maybe it's like you said, maybe I took her away from Uri, and that's just like ripping her away from her role. Maybe it was kind of a rape because I'm the king and she had no choice. Maybe it's the same. If I have a taiva, if I have these desires, who am I to say that Absalom or that Amnon is also, should not be understood for his for his ta'avot. Maybe I shouldn't say anything. So the doubt creeps into David because of his sin, and therefore the consequences arise as a natural result from David's sin. Which is my chocolate chip cookie example when I spoke at Aryeh's Bar Mitzvah. That is, if you come home too late, you could say that your mother won't give you chocolate chip cookies as a punishment. You could say that because they're all eaten. That is, the act of you coming home late causes there to be no chocolate chip cookies. The act of David allowing his taiva to get the best of him and allowing him to be face to face with some of his own real faults causes him to be unable to judge properly the faults, the similar faults of somebody else. And that's crime and consequence. Yes?
I would also maybe suggest that this was not the first time that he was frozen, that perhaps throughout Amnon's childhood, he was unable to effectively guide him in this area of sort of family values because of the moral.
That's a good question. The only problem that I have with that is that Amnon was born in the good time of David. I can't say, you know, I can't tell you that David, you know, spent 8 hours a day, you know, playing chess with Amnon, teach him the right morals and values. I would like to, in fact, say, look, if I remember, I said that there was no incest. I just can't accept that idea. It's too difficult for me. I'm not even comfortable with the Ishat Yifatoar. So therefore, why does he keep calling her my sister? So that doesn't bother me so much. He had a thing, you know. That was what got him excited. You know, let's put it this way. I remember the case. I hope nobody's a Woody Allen fan here, but I mean, like in Woody Allen with his daughter Sun Yi. Okay, she's not his daughter, but I mean, ooh, gross. I mean, you know, philosophically, it's a daughter. I have no idea what makes Woody Allen happy. I have no idea what makes Amnon happy. Obviously, if you don't say it's incest, Amnon still had a thing for my sis, you know, the virgin girl who wore the technicolor dream coat, who wore the donut pasim. However, in the first pasuk, Amnon does manage to suppress his feelings. He's sick with love for her, and yet the pasuk ends off, which is "Vayipalei be'enei Amnon." It was amazing. Literally, I'm going to translate literally. The world's difficult. It was amazing in the eyes of Amnon, which really means that he should do something was out of touch with Amnon. The word "Vayipalei" shows up like when the Malach comes to Shimshon's father, and he says, "What's your name?" He says, "Vayipalei mimcha." It's none of your business. It's too. It's supernatural. It's not your touch. So I think the way the translates is, "Vayipalei me'enei Amnon." He saw that this was not something he was able or allowed to do. "Lasot lo muman," there to do anything with her. So if the story would have ended at pasuk bet, if it wasn't for this guy Yonadav, who knew that he could leverage David's own sins against David, then I believe Amnon would have suppressed his feelings. Would that make him a guy I wanted to hang out with? No. But I mean, at least he had Yirat Hashem. At least he's saying, okay, I'm a sick guy, I'll stay away from that Avera. Right? It's a famous Gemara that says, a person should not say, I want to eat this treif, aval yesh alai ol mokal shamayim. So I really don't find Amnon to be too reprehensible in the first two Pesukim. Is he turned into an incredibly disgusting person? Absolutely. What was in it for Yonadav, by the way? I don't know. I gotta tell you, I don't know. Maybe some guys just get off on evil. I don't know what was with Yonadav, because I don't believe that he was in cahoots with Absalom, and I don't see why he would do better with Absalom than with Amnon. What difference would it make to him whether Absalom was the king or Amnon was king? How do I know that? Because Yonadav never shows up again. It's not like Yonadav becomes the next best friend of Absalom. He disappears from the story, and we never hear from him again. So as far as I know, I don't have a better answer than Yonadav was just a sicko. Just a guy who liked to, he was a real Iago, if you read Othello. He's a real guy who likes to cause evil behind the scenes. But Amnon, I don't think he's so bad. But now, after the sin, I think starts to go bad. And if we say that there's a consequence of David's actions, or inactions in this case, because of his early actions, is the rape of Amnon, isn't the next step obvious? The rape of Tamar by Amnon, isn't the next step obvious? Absalom's murder of Amnon, and to a certain degree, Absalom's not complete comfort with dear old dad. Absalom's going to come out to be a pretty cruddy guy. Whether we're going to get to that today, I don't know. Absalom really is going to turn out very cruddy. Nonetheless, because I don't like to ever paint any Tanakh figures as black or white, the classic medrash which proves that is the medrash about who's buried in the Marat HaMachpelah. If you remember, it's the four pairs plus Esau's head. Do you remember that? Everybody know that? They knocked off his head rolled in because he had good thoughts or he was Tamal Chacham. And I think that what that medrash really means is it means quite a few things. But one of the things I think the Medrash is trying to tell you is don't judge people in Tanakh. It's black and white. They're not cartoon characters. I believe also Absalom is not complete. Absalom deserves what he gets in the end. Don't get me wrong. But I can sympathize with a person who hates his father because his father didn't speak up after the rape of his sister. Now, that's not entirely true, because it looks like Absalom jumps right in there and tells his sister to be quiet so he can hatch his plot. Maybe he didn't give enough time for David to make his actions. So maybe Absalom really is a bad guy through and through. Nonetheless, what can I tell you? If you saw a similar situation like that, with a father that was inattentive to a child, then we could come up with all kinds of psychological... What's that? They say he spoiled him. And therefore, that David raised him incorrectly?
Yeah.
Okay. Here I could see Absalom being a little upset. Oh, yeah, he kills him cold blood. Don't get me wrong. I'm not trying to say that Absalom is not a... He had to calm down, to speak to David, to set things right. Oh, I think Absalom sees this as an opportunity to become the next king. Absolutely. I'm not trying to say that Absalom is not a thug. He is. I'm just saying thugs aren't born out of nowhere. You know, if his father had got in there and said, this is the way we're going to do things. We're going to judge you, and we're going to do this, and we're going to do that, and we're not going to pull any punches, and I don't care what happened between me and Bathsheba, this is the way we do things. I think Absalom would have much less legs to stand on. Just like Amnon would have much less legs to stand on if Yonatan hadn't used David against himself. So we have crime and consequence, and then one consequence and crime leads to a second consequence. So that brings us to the next page, which is Absalom's rise to power.
Can I just ask one question?
Absolutely, please.
Would it solely up to the king to sort of press charges and pass judgment in this case?
The job of a king is lasot tzedakah and mishpat. He's the highest court in the land. And one would think that if his own son had done something bad, it is David's responsibility to take care of things. I believe it's true both from a moral and familial sense, as well as a legal sense. Yes, he's supposed to do tzedakah and mishpat. Is it conflict of interest? You know what? I don't know the halacha. I think you're asking from a halachic answer. Is it okay for a father to sit on the court of his son? Yikes, I don't know. This is a great Rabbi Sprung question. I don't know. B'li neder, I'll try to remember this question, or as I listen to the shir again, I'll try to remember and see whether it's possible to sit in the court case. But even if you say that he doesn't have a legal responsibility, he certainly has a familial responsibility to get involved. Certainly has a familial responsibility. Yes, correct. Yes. Right, and therefore, go ahead. And therefore, that makes a statement about. Yes, I believe so. I believe he lacked a certain strength. He should have been able to be objective. He was unable to be objective. What's that? He was a humongous hero. He was. And we're going to see he comes back, as he came back to strength after Bathsheba, he'll come back to strength a little bit here also with a little help from some friends. I hope we'll get there. We may not. This is true. Those problems were external, and he managed to rise up almost all over all of them. These are more internal. I don't want to... Here's the problem, and this is why I try not to teach to this level when I teach younger kids, because they have a hard time with the gray area. But I like to hold what Rav Soloveitchik said, that he was a Yehuda. He was from Shevet Yehuda. I suppose the Shevet Yosef, which is a very tzaddik, and I'm not even interested in Potiphar. Yehuda was a Tamar, he saw a woman named Tamar, which, by the way, is the same name here. What's that? Oh, yeah. Oh, no, any relation familially? Peretz, eventually, down the line, yeah. But the fact that the name is similar is no mistake. By the way, there's all kinds of Yosef and even Dina story going on all over this. This we could just spend a week or 2 weeks just on this little parsha and all of its comparisons with Shechem and with Dina and with Yehuda and Tamar. But what Rav Soloveitchik said was the whole idea of a king is that a king has to be able to sin, because if you're not a sinner as a king, then you can't relate to your people, because then you just look at your people and you're like, who are you? I mean, why are you doing these bad things? Or as Rav Meidan said, who was one of my Rebbeim in Gush, was that the whole idea of kingship is predicate on a return to tshuva. Why? Because the whole idea of a shofet, you pick the best guy. But a king, very often, you have loser sons. And therefore, it has to be built into the endemics, almost the genetic structure of the familial line, to be able to correct sins, even if a single person can't correct it, the son has to. It's a famous parak in Yechezkel that we shouldn't spend so much time on. Yechezkel gives the four possibilities. A tzaddik that has a tzaddik, a rasha that has a rasha, a tzaddik that has a rasha, and a rasha that has a tzaddik. So it's very interesting philosophical stuff. How do you come back when things go bad? But that's really for another That's for another shiur. Absalom's rise to power. So what Absalom essentially runs away. I think I'm going to have to skip a little bit because we have already been going for 40 minutes. No, about 35 minutes. So I want to pick up the pace a little bit because there's some really cool stuff towards the end. So Absalom runs away after he kills. He has Amnon killed and he runs away. I just want to show you an interesting structure. I'm not even sure I have time to go into it, but I have to touch on it a little bit, which is in Absalom's rise to power in the first parak. Do you notice the things that I bolded? Three times. Do you see that? What I bolded? Vayivrach Absalom. Va'avshalom barach, va'avshalom barach. Do you see that in the first part of Absalom's rise to power? That's very important. The Navi doesn't write that unless he means to say something. What's interesting is very few Mefarshim, if any of the medieval Farshim, talk about the triple language. But there are difficulties in the text itself. Take a look at the first pasuk. Va'yivrach Absalom. This is when David thinks that all of his kids are dead. Yonadav, by the way, spills the beans. Yonadav comes back and says, oh, they're not only dead, just Amnon's dead. Now, David obviously is thinking, now how would you know that, Yonadav, by the way? That's really, that's not the point of the shir, and I didn't include that text, but next time you read that, pay close attention. A rumor comes back that all the kids are dead, and Yonadav is with David far away in Yerushalayim, says, oh no, don't worry, they're not all dead, just Amnon's dead. So right there, David gets extremely suspicious that there's a plot going on. Vayivrach Absalom, and then Absalom runs away. Vayisa Narat Sofer, so the watchtower guy looks out. Vayar Vihinei Amrav Hochi Miderach Acharav. There are a lot of people coming down. Mitzad Ahar, and essentially what's happened is the brothers are coming back, the ones who survived. That is everybody except for Amnon, and the only person who's not there is Absalom. It's a very strange language because what is Vayivrach Absalom has nothing to do with the rest of the pasuk, but I believe it does actually. What it's trying to say is the family is now sundered and shattered. In fact, I want to go to Pasuk Lamed Daled because something very interesting happens there. Va'avshalom barach, and Absalom runs away. Va'yelech el Tamai ben Amihud, which is his grandfather, his mother's father, Melech Geshur. Va'yit Abel al Bno, it's talking about David, he's mourning for his son, Kol Hayamim, all the days. All the Mefarshim, most of the Mefarshim, except for the El Shaykh, says that the son that he's mourning for is none other than Amnon. Amnon's dead. Except it's not really mashba from the pasuk, right? Look at the context of the pasuk. Va'avshalom barach, va'yelech atalma ben amichud melech shur, va'yidabel al bno kol hayamim. Not only that, the word kol hayamim is very strange. Because if you look at the next pasuk, it says, va'avshalom barach, va'yelech shur, va'yihi sham shlosh shanim. He was there for 3 years. Va'techal David ha-melech. This word techal is difficult. It means he had desires, latseit el Absalom, to go and get Absalom back. That's what this means, and I can't really go into it too much because it'll take too long. Kinacham al Amnon. Why did he want to get him back? Because he had nachamim. He was consoled for Amnon ki mate. That doesn't match with Vayitabel al Bno kol hayamim. Doesn't match at all. Therefore, there are those more modern mafarshim that want to say Vayitabel al Bno kol hayamim is talking about none other than Absalom, which fits in with Pasuk Lamed Chet, because there we see that once he goes back to Geshur and Lamed Tet, that David has a massive desire for him. He loves Absalom, really loves him. And therefore, I don't find it difficult, the idea that one would mourn for one's son. That is, Absalom goes into exile because he killed his brother. Although he didn't actually kill him, he commanded servants to kill his brother. But it's an interesting difference that may or may not come into play, because I don't know, it looks like I'm going to stop this year in the sort of, I'll try to come to a good stopping point. But he doesn't kill himself, and it's an important issue. It comes up later on. But the idea that one brother kills the other brother, the first brother goes into exile. In fact, the first brother who kills a brother in Torah, of course, is none other than Cain and Abel. And Cain is then, in fact, if you take a look at the Lashon there, when Chava has Sheit, she says, I am essentially paid back for the children that I have lost. Ah, Cain's still alive. Barely, you know, he's been sent out of the family. And it's not difficult to understand when a son does something like this. If one son killed another son, while you would love that son is like washed away from the family, at least in a good moral place. So Absalom essentially has been exiled three times. And I think the Pasukim are repeating that because it's trying to show the kind of shattering effect that had on David HaMelech, to the point where he was quicker to forget, to essentially be consoled for Amnon, who had died, than for Absalom, who was simply exiled, is like dead to me.
Mm-hmm.
not only is there a connection, but when, if I don't know if you're familiar with the story, and I hope to get there, Yoav wants to get Avshalom back because he sees the king loves him. So he gets up this Ish Chachamah from Tekoa to come and tell this whole story about her two sons that were fighting. And it says specifically, Vayinatsu shtei benai, which means my two sons were fighting. But the word Vayinatsu does not appear often. It actually appears by Moshe Rabbeinu. But that's a parallel. I think that there is a parallel. I'm not entirely... I'm sure there's a parallel for the word Vayinatsu. I'm not sure what the parallel means. But I think there is a parallel, and I think it's worth pursuing. So if you discover why they make a parallel between Avshalom and the exile and Moshe Rabbeinu, I would love to know. I'd love to know. But yes, I think textually you can't ignore it. What happens is they bring him back. Yoav brings him back. But what happens is, David says, this is the second paragraph, David says, I'll just flip through this quickly, David says, I don't want to see him. He can come back to Yerushalayim, but I'm not going to look at him. Upnei HaMelech Lo Ra'ah, those are the bolded words. Then it goes into a weird story about how he, Pasach Chavav and Chavhei got mixed up a little bit, I'm sorry, but essentially he had beautiful hair, he was a beautiful guy, this is where he learns he's a Nazir, he's even a good Nazir. Every year he halachically goes and shaves his hair, not any sooner than a year and not any later than a year, and he brings sacrifices and he's a beautiful, beautiful guy, but looks what he names his child. You see the last line in Shmuel Bet Perek Yudalad, in the second paragraph? It's a little bit mixed up. Vayivaldu l'vav shalom shlosha banim u'bat. He had three sons and a daughter. Achat u'shma. What does he name his daughter? Tamar. Well, there's a message for dear old dad, don't you think? There's a message for dear old dad. What is he essentially trying to say? See, he's got a problem. David doesn't want to see him. Why? Why would you say David doesn't want to see him? Correct, he's a murderer. Listen, I'm willing to accept him back because I love him, but he's a murderer. I am not going to take him back. The message that Avshalom is clearly trying to send is, yeah, but I had an excuse, Dad, and let me name my daughter Tamar. It's a pretty chutzpahdik thing to do, if you really. You get a sense of Avshalom's a little bit of his thuggery, but he's certainly a smart guy. He's not an idiot. Now let's go back, and what happens is that David essentially... in the third paragraph, right after the three dots, it says, "Vayomer Avshalom al Yoav, hine shalachti lecha lemor." I'm sending you Yoav. I'm skipping a part where he burns down Yoav's fields. It's not important right now. "Vashachal chal amelech lemor." Go to the king. "Lama bati migshur." Why did you bring me back? Why did I come back from Kshur? "Tov li od ani sham." I had a better life there. "Ata ereh pnei hamelech." Let me see the face of the king. "Vim yeshbo aven v'him mitani." If I really have a sin, then kill me. So essentially he's saying, let's stop playing this no man's land game. Make a decision. Either you see me, in which case the verdict on me is that I am innocent, or kill me. I'll take either one. David accepts him, essentially expunging Avshalom of his sin. Why does Avshalom need this? Because nobody will accept a murderer as a king. But if David accepts Avshalom, then Avshalom is scot-free. In the next part, in Perek Tet Vav, he then step-by-step builds a kingship, and he does it in two very scary ways.
Why does David accept him?
Because he loves him, and because of the story of the Isha Tekoit, which I skipped, which was, the Isha Tekoit had two people fighting in the fields. One brother came to the other brother and killed him. All the other family members wanted the second son, dead, and she didn't have a husband. She accuses all of the other family members of wanting to kill the second son, not because they have a right to kill the second son, because there were no witnesses there, but because they want to inherit the fields. David comes up with a mishpat in that case, and then she accuses the woman, the chachama, accuses David of the wrong mishpat, of doing the wrong thing. He then figures out that they're talking about Avshalom. The seed is planted that essentially Avshalom, A, who knows if they're witnesses, B, he didn't do the mice himself, and C, the only reason why they want Avshalom out is because he's not the Yoresh. That's the real connection between the story of the Isha Tekoi, is the fact of two brothers and who's going to inherit. If you keep Avshalom out, who's going to be the inheritor? David wants Avshalom back. Shlomo's still a baby at this point. Who knows how Shlomo's going to grow up? He wants Avshalom back because Avshalom's the next in command. Wouldn't a king want his next oldest son in command? Because once you give it to the... Once you're essentially saying that, I'm not going to give it to the next king in line, I'll give it to somebody down the line, you know you're going to be causing problems. You know that the brothers are going to be killing each other in the streets. The best thing for a king to do is to have his son be the next in line. Not only that, we'll see, he loves Avshalom, because the son loves the father. He really, really loved him. We'll see that when Absalom gets killed, oh boy, oh boy. He says the word B'ni 8 times. And what Chazal say is 7 times to bring Absalom out of the 7 phases of hell. So that because Absalom was a sinner and he recognized it, but he used the word B'ni 7 times to bring him out of hell, to make him a Benoni, and then 1 extra time to send him up into heaven. There was real love going on there, and I've never had a difficulty with that love. Even a murderous son, honestly. People,
yeah,
they love their kids. Well, that's where essentially he's being forced to admit that he wasn't a murderer. Now, we could split hairs on that, but David has been cowed by Yoav in the Ishat Koit. In fact, let's take a look at David's cowing, and then I'll... Not yet. Not yet. I don't think yet. I don't think Shlomo is old enough. This is happening. Shlomo... What's that? That is, according to the Medrash, true, that he had anticipated that this would be true. Nonetheless, we even see in Sefer Melachim, when Adoniyahu, the 4th son, even there, he's wishy-washy about it. So even if David wants it, he's still worried, uh-oh, do I really have the right to set up a king from the woman that everybody knows that I either sinned or didn't sin with? I certainly sinned, but I may have even committed adultery with. And certainly, even if halakhically he didn't, people thought he did. So we see even later in Sefer Melachim that David's got a big problem with how it will look. Certainly here, when Shlomo, I think, is very, very young, and it's hard to say which way Shlomo would go. Now, it's true, God loved him, and he was a good kid, and Natan the prophet took him in, but I doubt that happened at the very beginning of Shlomo's life. You got to figure he hit 5, 6, 10, 12, had a bar mitzvah, started putting on tefillin, before they really saw that he was, you know, that type of kid. So certainly, if David is wishy-washy later, I think David is a little uncomfortable here about Shlomo Melech, even if he knows it's the right thing to do. Let's see what Absalom does. It's a terrible thing, and then I'll show you how it affects the rest of his life, so we'll finish up in about, is a quarter, if I go to 9:45, is that too late? Please say so if that's a... It's fine. Okay, and then I'll definitely stop at 9:45. Vahi me'acharechen, it was after this time, which means essentially, what, again, we have those words, vahi me'acharechen. In this case, it's after David rehabilitates Absalom. He's no longer considered a murderer. Vayaslo Absalom merkavav susim chamishim yishratzim lefanav. He makes an honor guard, a military honor guard. Good move. Vehishkim Absalom. And then what does he do? He gets up in the morning. Now the word hishkim is like people who are zrizim makdim in the mitzvah, like when Avram was mashkim baboker to do what God commanded him to do. So it shows real gumption. Va'amar al yad derech hashar. He stands by the gate. Vayehi kol ha'ish asher yellow riv. When anybody came up to the gate to have a court case with the king, lavol amelech mishpat. Vayikra Absalom vayomer emi ze irata. From what city are you? Vayomer me'achat shiftei Yisrael avdecha. I'm from one of the tribes, which is obviously excluding which tribe? Yehuda. Which means Absalom is making a play for the other tribes. He's trying to say, I'm a friend of the other tribes. Vayomer lav Absalom re'ei dvarecha tovim l'chonim. Everybody's right. Everybody's okay. Which is kind of weird in and of itself. My students always ask, how is it possible that everybody's right? I don't know if anybody has ever been in small claims court. Everybody been in small claims court? So if you know in small claims court, you could either call on the bench or you could either say on the bench or not by the bench. On the bench means you're going to the judge, he's going to give the verdict, and you may even have witnesses, etc., etc. If you don't want to do it by the bench, it means you go to a lawyer. What? An arbitrator, and usually, I think, and I'm not an expert at this, I wish Glenn Goldberg was here, because he could tell me about a lot about it. Anybody have lawyers in the family? I think the arbitrator is, you are? So I think, so please tell me if I'm wrong, I could be wrong. I know it was like this when I was in small claims court. What? Everyone's always right. You try to come with like a middle road so that nobody's upset, you get them out quickly. So that seems to be really the philosophy. Everybody's right. I'll make everybody happy. Oh, is he a smart guy, man? Absalom, holy cow. Let's see what he does next. What's that?
Not on the people's court. Everyone was always wrong.
Well, on the people's court, it's good. Why? Because you get paid like $250 to show up. So even if you lose $300, you're still not doing so bad. So maybe that was the deal. For all we know, in fact, I'll mention that. It could be that Absalom was recompensating the losers. I'll show you in a second. Where were we? Oh, and then he says something terrible in those bolded words. V'shomea in l'chameit ha'melech. The king won't hear your case. Now again, there are two possibilities. Either he's lying or he's not lying. But if he's not, I have a hard, and most people want to say he's lying and that really the king would hear the case. I have a hard problem with that, and I've mentioned this before in Shirim that I've given before. If one of you comes over and says, you know, Rabbi Levy, I've got a problem, I'm going to speak to Rabbi Sprung, and I say, don't talk to Rabbi Sprung, he's not going to speak to you, all you have to do is walk down the stairs and find out. It's a hard lie to make unless you really want to be convinced. the truth, I mean, it's really a hard lie. All I have to do is walk another, I don't know, a mile or a kilometer to go up to David's house and say, hey, can I get a court case? And David says, yes, and I got a court case. Why should I stop at the gate and get from Absalom if I go directly to the highest court in the land? You can say that Absalom was lying, but I'm going to show you that David had actually taken a step back. The first case that we saw that he took a step back from Mishpat was his own son, was Amnon. We'll see that he steps back more and more from Mishpat until he steps back completely. So again, you could say he's lying, but I don't think he is. Vayomer Avshalom, mi simeni shofei baretz, who of course has made me the shofet of the land, hinted, maybe my father. Va'alai yavol koli shasher yelo riv mishpat, v'hitzdaktiv. V'hitzdaktiv, according to Targum Yonatan, means I will tell the truth. It says, daninan kushtia, from the word kshot. However, there's another way to understand the word hitzdaktiv. The word tzedek, mishpat, as I mentioned before, mishpat is the strict application of the law, and tzedek is when you take your money out of your pocket, the judge does, and gives to the poor guy who just lost the case, so that you go beyond the above letter of the law. So here, too, he seems to be hinting out that he's going to make everybody happy. Vaya, now look at this. Look at this guy. Vayhi b'krav ishli shtachavah lo, when everybody came down to bow down to him, v'shalach ha-gadoi, don't bow down. Come here. Hey, he takes him by the arm. V'chazik lo, he lifts him up. V'nashach lo, he gives him a kiss. Vayas Avshalom kidvar zeh l'chol Yisrael asher yavol l'mishpat. He used to do this to everybody who came for a court case. Vayiganev Avshalom et lev anshei Yisrael. He stole their hearts. I mean, the guy's a genius. Because what he's done is he's led a coup that's not like one of those military coups. This is a grassroots rebellion. A grassroots rebellion. In fact, when Shimi ben Gera comes out, you would think Shimi ben Gera is from Shevet Binyamin, that he wants somebody from Binyamin to rule. When he's cursing out David, he says, good, your son should have it. He'll lead the rest of us. Why? Because Avshalom has been busy. And here's something, I'd like to go to the next page, or actually, yeah, the next page. In the next pasuk it says, Vayihimi Ketzar Bayim Shana. So I want you to notice something. I'm not going to spend too much time on it because I won't have time. I only have 4 minutes. But I want you to notice something. From Avshalom's return to Vayihimi Ketzar Bayim Shana after 40 years, it's a very difficult phrase because David has only ruled for 40 years. So if you say it's from the start of David's rule, then like it can't be. So Chazal say it's from the start of Shaul's rule, which will make it the 37th year of David's rule. That is at least 15, 17 years after all of the incident of Amnon and Bathsheba. And also after Avshalom came back, which means you shouldn't read Tanakh and say, oh yeah, the next thing he did after the king was willing to see him is it took him 2 days, because from Pasuk Vav, he comes back, he's now rehabilitated. Pasuk Zayin is busy stealing the hearts of everybody, and then by Pasuk Yud, he's got a grassroots rebellion. It didn't, even though it happens in 4 Pesukim, it doesn't happen in 4 days. Many, many years go by, and therefore one should understand that he's doing a good job of bringing back the people. The next page, instead of Don't Rush Tanakh. This is an important concept, and I'll finish with this. This is called a chiasmus. A chiasmic, which actually comes from letter Chet, is a structure where it's the following structure, A, B, C, B, A. It goes up to a top, and it comes down. Chiasmuses are all over the Torah, and when the Torah uses it, it wants to show you that there's a relationship between what happens after the pinnacle and what happens before. So let's go through the story quickly, and then I'll show you what's going on. David is on the run out from Absalom, and the first person he meets is a guy named Tziva Mephibosheth. That's on the lower left-hand side. Vayomer Melech, Vayei ben Adonecha, Tziva, how come you're here? How come you're not serving Mephibosheth? It's on this block, which is here, this part of Tziva Mephibosheth. So he says, oh, I'll tell you why. Tziva Mephibosheth is a traitor against you. He supports Absalom, and here's all the food that I brought you. David then rips all the property that he had taken away from Tziva and given to Mephibosheth 5 chapters earlier, and he gives them back to Tziva. Immediately afterwards, Shimi ben Gera shows up, and take a look what happens. V'cho amar Shimi b'kalo. This is what Shimi says in his cursing. Tzei tzei isha damim v'isha plial. Hashiv alecha Hashem kol d'mei Beit Shaul. He'll pay you back for all of the blood of Beit Shaul. Asher malachta tachdav that you ruled on him. V'yaten Hashem avucha b'yad Avshalom b'necha. And Avshalom should be the king. V'nei b'ra'atecha ki ish damim ata. You're a man of blood. If it was that Shimi ben Gera was going to come out to see him anyway, that is, what I'm claiming is that the only reason why Shimi ben Gera, who is a family member of Shaul, comes out is because David ripped the property away from Mephibosheth and gave it back to Tziva. That's got to annoy B'nai Binyamin. If you're saying, no, he didn't want David to be a ruler at all, that he didn't want the house of David, it's hard to say that because he was happy with Absalom. Also, why did he spend the last 15 years or 20 years or 30 years, if this is after 40 years of rulership, How can you say that? Shimi ben Gera never rebelled once, and all of a sudden now he's rebelling. So you can say, all right, now he has a chance because David's finally on the run. Now David's weak, but I don't think so. And the proof is that after David gets back from the exile, the exact opposite happens. First Shimi ben Gera shows up, and then Siva and Mephibosheth show up. And let me show you what happens. Shimi ben Gera shows up, but he's no idiot. Vayimaher Shimi ben Gera on the top right. Ben Gera Yimini, Asher ben Bachurim.